smoked it anyways. And, you know, I didn't get high. I heard the neighbors two houses over hollering, you know, the tunnel hearing that you used to get. And I was sure that, you know, somebody was going to pull in my driveway and call on the phone and got real paranoid. But something really important happened that I didn't have a clue of. I lost that week or 2 weeks or however long I had been clean. I lost that time. And I didn't know how valuable that was. I didn't know until I lost it. But I didn't tell anybody because I didn't want to lose my time. Yeah. I went back to a meeting and I didn't talk about it. I was still sober. You know, I just hadn't used. Or I just had used. I hadn't drank. And but I knew in my heart that it wasn't okay. And so the next time I had a resentment, it was a little easier. Yeah. And it was a very short period of time. I don't remember the dates. It doesn't matter to me. All I know is that I went out one last time. Everything that can happen to you happened to me. And I was so grateful to be able to come back to a meeting. And the only meeting going on was this stupid NA meeting. In Flint, Michigan, there were 400 meetings of the other fellowship and one NA meeting. And the NA meeting was on Sunday night at 7 o'clock at the club. And that's the only meeting that I could make. And I was so angry. And I figured this was God's way of getting even with me for having used. Made me go to this NA meeting. And I went to the meeting and I've been going to it because people kept telling me, you know, you ought to go check out NA. You know, and I couldn't understand why they were trying to get rid of me. I'd gone, and the meeting was really sad. It had started a couple years earlier, and a couple bikers from California had driven there and dropped off a box of literature. And the literature was For Those We Love and Others and a little white book. And this one guy kept the literature at home because he was afraid we, us junkies, would steal it. He was probably right, too. And he is still clean, and he is one of my best friends in recovery. And I see him a lot, and I'm so grateful for him. But I really didn't like him. But I did relate to him because he was the only other addict in that meeting who had shot drugs. Everybody else had smoked dope, and I thought they were just, you know, wimpy. You know, they didn't know what a bottom was. And I went to this meeting, and at this meeting, it was usually a bunch of, you know, well, you think that's bad, I did this, and everybody bragging on what they did, and, or talking about who they went out with, or, you know, it was really superficial. And I went in, and I was really desperate, because I knew now that line, jail's institution or death, hit home. I knew I had to find something. And he opened up the little white book, and he read One at the End of the Road. And, for the first time, I believed that there was some place that I could go to and I could find people who felt just like I did. You know, I believed that there was hope. I'm not saying there wasn't hope where I'd gone before. I'm not saying that. But for me, those words hit my soul, and I understood them. And I'm really grateful that the man who wrote those words did, because it saved my life. He was just another addict, just like us. No better, no worse, just an addict. And I will work real hard to make sure people understand that. You know, we're all just addicts, every single one of us who choose to believe that. I hung around NA for 9 months on the words that I read in that little white book. And we called it a hip hop pocket program then, because I could stick that book in my jeans pocket and take it to work with me, and I could run in the bathroom and pull that out and read when, you know, I wanted to kill a customer or use or whatever, you know. And I stayed clean for 9 months, and one other thing I did was I would pick anybody up and take them to a meeting, you know. I would go to any length to be with somebody. I had people sleeping on my couch. You ask my kids, they didn't know who their mom was, you know. One of them women. Yeah. and phone numbers. I got phone numbers, and I called people, and eventually I even started calling women. How amazing is that? You know? And there was this one woman I thought might be my sponsor, but I wasn't too sure. She wore dresses, and she had bleach blonde hair, and I just wasn't sure I could cope with that, you know? You know, I really didn't want a Barbie, but, you know, every time she talked to me, she'd just blow me away with what she'd have to say, you know? And I was going to meetings, and I hadn't used, okay? I wasn't using, and I was going to meetings, and I was saying, my life is just as screwed up now as it ever was. The only difference is I'm not using, and it's harder, you know? And she started talking about, you know, addiction being more than just using. You know, it's the way we think. It's why we do the stuff we do. And at 9 months clean, she and this guy that kept the books under his chair and took them home at night went down to Tennessee, to Georgia. Yeah, Georgia, I forget. Went down south to a convention and left me home. And, you know, I had 3 small kids, and I was supporting them and working and going to a meeting every single night. So if you say you can't get to a meeting, don't tell me that. You know, I'm not going to buy it. In fact, I made a decision very early that if my kids came between me and my recovery, I was going to have to do something drastic, because without my recovery, my kids didn't have a chance. And it was the hardest decision I ever made in my life. And I think because I made that decision, they never did, and we never had to make that choice. But they went down to Tennessee and or Georgia or wherever it was, they called me from this convention, you know, and they took their games with them. You know, isn't that what you do at conventions? You know, you take your game boards and, you know, fancy clothes to get dressed up and go to the dances and all that stuff. And they called me Saturday night and said, our meeting was now Monday night, our NA meeting. They called me Sunday night and said that they were going to be at the Monday night meeting and they wanted me there. And I couldn't figure out why in the world they called me and said they wanted me at this meeting. You know, but I went. And they came in, and for the first time in my life, I seen what a spiritual experience is. I seen it on someone else's face. You'd think I could do this without getting upset. Anyways, they were changed. You know, the blonde didn't have her makeup on. It's the first time in my life I'd ever seen her without makeup. You know, and her hair wasn't perfect. But they looked, they were glowing. They were actually, it was just amazing the way they looked. And they sat down, and she sat down next to me, and she pushed this book next to me. And it was the approval form. And she just slid it over to me, and I read obsessively. I always have. You know, cereal boxes, you know, cigarette cartons, anything. Set it in front of me, and I can tell you what it says, you know. So I started reading it, and it was a Narcotics Anonymous basic text. It was our book, you know. And it was small. It wasn't big. It was amazing. And I started reading it in chapter after chapter, you know, just thumbing through it. Can't save your face and your ass at the same time. Boy, did that hit home, you know. And just a whole chapter on relapse. You know, it's not an accident. Nobody told me it wasn't an accident. I heard terms like slip, you know, and a slip sounds like a guy does on a banana peel, like a funny little thing that might happen to you. My slip was not a funny little thing. You know, it about cost me my life. And there's a whole chapter that said there are signs that lead up to this, that I didn't have to be afraid of it anymore. You know, I didn't have to wake up wondering, why am I still clean, and am I going to be clean when I go to bed tonight? You know, it gave me hope. It was totally amazing. When they were all done sharing, and they shared about what they'd found, they found NA. And up until then, we just had this little one NA meeting, you know, and they talked about a whole fellowship out there that we weren't even aware of, and that they hugged at meetings. They didn't shake hands. They hugged. And the reason they hugged is because when I see you today, this may be the last time I see you. You could be dead tomorrow. And so we hug. And I was just enthralled with what they had to say. And at the end of the meeting, they asked if anyone had any clean time. And I said, well, I got 9 months, if that means anything. And oh, the lady got all excited and jumped up and said, well, we got NA paraphernalia. You know, we've got all kinds of good stuff. And she gave me a coin for 9 months. And on the back of it said that no addict seeking recovery need ever die. And I believed it. I knew that if I was willing to put in the effort that I put into using and to staying clean, that this thing was going to work for me. It was that piece to the puzzle. It was like the whole world was given this puzzle when they were born, and they had all the pieces. And I had one missing, and I never knew where it was. And I found it in Narcotics Anonymous. And that one little meeting, we just focused everything on Narcotics Anonymous, getting more meetings. We got 7 meetings. Then we got a region in Michigan. And about the time the region went through, I'd gone to a Third East Coast Convention, and I met this guy there. I met a lot of people there. And these people were the people that worked on writing the book. And so I just picked their brains. You know, I gave up hanging around with people with my time, and I went to the people with a lot of time. And at that time, a lot of time was 5 years, 7 years. I met a guy that had only gone to Narcotics Anonymous meetings exclusively. He had gotten clean in California, and that's all he did. You know, he said, if you don't base your life on it, how do you expect other people to? You know, and I thought, oh shit. So I really got involved. And this time it wasn't with dances. This time it was really involved in service. And of course, back then we called service opening the meeting and making coffee. You know, it wasn't a big deal. In fact, if you went to the bathroom, you were it. When you came back, the position was yours. So you learn not to drink coffee. In fact, I was joking around. I never drank coffee till I went to meetings. Yeah. And now I don't drink decaf, I don't drink caffeinated coffee anymore, and it's so cool. My home group, we have decaf coffee and no smoking. How amazing is that? But it wasn't that way when we first came around. And